Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast.
My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the A from Engine Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, Everything School HQ over there in, who knows? He's up there in the attic. He's doing work till who knows when. It's my favorite co-night owl covering the volunteers of VolQuest.com, Brent Hubbs. Brent, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chase. Hope you're doing well, my friend. Hope you're enjoying the warm sunshine. Hopefully it'll stay this way for a little while. We're kindred spirits in that we have no use for cold weather. So
no,
God bless spring. God bless long days. And here's to hopefully a busy spring of, you know, a lot of intrigue on the football side of things, a baseball team that's in the top five, and maybe a basketball team that can actually make a long run here in the postseason. So it's a crazy time right now. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm going to have to talk with my wife of like, I guess I'll see you next week because of what the basketball baseball schedule is this weekend and over the potential next week or two. There's a lot going on here with Tennessee baseball and basketball and spring practice next week. I mean, this is you're not going to find a more hectic. This is like one of the it's a good problem to have, I guess, is to be this good at everything right now. Is that everything is must see. Tennessee baseball against Alabama is must see. Tennessee SEC tournament is must see. Spring practice, glimpses of Nico, that's all must see. Like, it's just, there's a lot of good Tennessee content to cover and watch right now.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's why they're the everything school, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of good things happening on campus. And I think you go back to the leadership that starts with Randy Boyd and Dondi Plowman. That's put Tennessee in a you know, a very good spot. You know, they've got good coaches. They've got stability. I think they've got the bulk of the NCAA stuff behind them, if not all of it behind them at this point. And it's full steam ahead, you know, on all fronts. But in particular, football on Monday when they hit the practice field, and then where Rick Barnes and his team is now that they move into the second phase of the season, which is, you know, the dreaded one and done phase. If you have a bad day, it's all over type deal. So it's a different mindset there. And then baseball is just in a marathon. I mean, they're in like mile three of the 26 mile marathon right now. And it's been a little nice downhill run for them. You know, when you look at their schedule, they've cruised and now there's some hills to climb as you get into the competitiveness of the SEC.
I'm excited to pace around my house every weekend once again, because goodness gracious, the cardiac balls, like every weekend it's going to be intense. And obviously with basketball too, with the tournament, both SEC and baseball. But I want to focus on football here, Brent, with spring practice coming down the pike here next week. Lot I've been thinking about when it comes to Tennessee's 2024 roster. Obviously, the 8.5 over under goes up to 9.5 in the last month. There's more and more belief, more buy-in and Tennessee fourth best SEC title odds of 16, which is huge. Like coming into the year, like that's it. You're like, oh, fourth place. It's like, well, in a divisionalist SEC with Texas and Oklahoma jumping into the fray, there's a lot of excitement and a lot of buy-in in what year four could look like here under Josh Heupel in Knoxville. But my first question to you, what is your number one spring practice question that you've been thinking the most about with Tennessee football right now?
I think it's, big picture wise, it's probably just how deep is this team? How much, when you leave spring practice, how many guys do you think, man, that guy could really help us? He can help us with the ball. That proverbial above the line and below the line, if you will, you look at a guy and say, well, he's probably a year plus away. Or you look at this guy and go, hey, he's definitely ready to go. I don't think that you're going to come out of spring and have a left tackle established. I don't think you're going to come out and have your five secondary guys as you're replacing all your starters from a year ago. I don't think you're going to come out and go, okay, these are our five. We're done. Yeah. I think it's more about how many in the back end do I feel like that we can win with right now? Is that five? Is that eight? Is that 10, 12? Same thing for the offensive line. Is it four guys searching for a fifth and then I don't know? Or do you come out of spring practice and go, hey, you know what? We got seven or eight guys we think we can line up and play with, if called upon, that they can go, play and play winning football for us. So for me, it's about how deep is this team at different positions. Look, the wide receiver spot looks really deep right now, right? Are those new skill guys going to live up to that hype? If you say so, then they're going to be that's going to be a really deep squad. Tight end wise, a lot to prove there. So there's a lot of questions. I think big picture, the biggest question is, of your 85 scholarship guys, and let's throw in a few walk-ons. Let's say 90 guys. Of your 90 guys that could are talented enough to play, how many of them do you believe it could line up and win for you right now? And what does that number look like at the end of spring compared to the start of spring? Is that a greater number? Are you a deep team? Or are you a team that you go, we can't get here, or this guy's gonna have a great summer here to have a chance to help us? Those are the big things for me.
I think that's interesting, the way you're looking at it. It's like, I think so many fans probably glob on to, okay, who's going to be the starter? Who's going to be the difference maker? But what you're suggesting, and I think that's a really astute point of it, like, it's actually about who is not going to be a factor, is like who we got, like come summer and fall, they're just too far gone, or it's going to take some time. Like it could be freshmen. It could be guys who you hoped were going to be able to make a jump from year two to year three, things like that, where you're like, they're not going to be rotation guys, it looks like. So you just know, so you can plan better for the summer and fall and just kind of know, because not everybody's going to be ready. Not everybody's going to be ready to contribute. And spring ball actually being on the inverse of what folks might expect, I think, is a big one. And then I think part two is, I am very curious how they handle tight end spring and summer, because when you talk about a position group that can't suffer any major injuries going into this year, they've been very fortunate. Tennessee has, even with the numbers from the first year with Heupel and the last couple, like they haven't really had to deal with some devastating injuries to any particular room outside of maybe you could say linebacker last year. That one was hit pretty hard, right, by the end of the year, but by and large, Tennessee's had some really nice injury luck, the last 3 years. That room this year in particular cannot suffer any major injuries to one of Holden Stays and Ethan Davis. And Ethan Davis has been banged up before. He got injured literally in the spring game last year with a big time catch from Nico. So I am most curious in terms of position groups from this spring. My question is, how involved and how hard do they push Holden and Ethan? Because you have to have them both 100% come first week of September.
Yeah, the challenge for that position, though, is those are not returning veterans that you can put them in bubble wrap and put them on the shelf, right?
Not a Cooper Mays situation.
Yeah, right. It's not Cooper Mays and it's not James Pierce, right? Mm-hmm. It's these guys who, hey, I know what that guy can do. I don't really want to hear about them. Mm-hmm. Instead, these are guys that Holden Stays is coming from, a Notre Dame offense that bled the clock, that was pretty methodical into this offense. And we heard McCollin Castles a year ago talk about just how difficult the transition it was. you know, just learning the Tennessee offense and mm-hmm. how it can overwhelm you if you're not careful. He credited Jacob Warren for helping him into that. But Holden State's got to figure this offense out. You can't do that by standing and watching. You can't do it by just going through walkthroughs. You've got to be in the fray. And Ethan Davis is a guy who's got to get more physical, right? He's got to be mm-hmm. a more physical blocker. You don't do that by standing and watching. But to your point, you can't afford to get one of them hurt in spring practice, but you can't afford not to practice them either, you know, and that's the challenge of that position. So you just got to go get those guys ready, and you hope if they get banged up, it's something minimal that they can bounce back from, you know, really quickly after spring practice. And you just hope that there's no significant injury, and knock on wood, you just don't have anything like that happen. But you just can't take a chance and saying, hey, we're going to limit all your contact until week one, because we don't have any other options at the tight end position. When in reality, those guys need as much work as anybody on this roster does.
There's all kinds of intrigue there, and I can't wait to see what it looks like. And like you said, they're going to have to learn, and they're going to have to play, and you're just going to have to hope that they're able to stay healthy this year, because they're just so critical to what Tennessee does. And you've talked about for years just how important the tight end position is in this offense. So Holden and Ethan making the leap and being healthy and being available is going to be critical this spring and summer. What position battle are you most locked in on this spring?
I think probably safety. But for one, you're replacing two veteran guys. Okay. I mean, Jalen McCullough played 487,000 snaps in his time at Tennessee. I mean, he had more starts than anybody in school history and just played, you know, just all the time. He's gone. Wesley Walker's gone. So you got two new safeties coming in there. And who are those guys?
Yeah.
Kobe Thomas is the transfer from Middle Tennessee State. I mean, he made the wise choice in picking Tennessee because, you know, looks like an opportunity to step right in and play right away mm-hmm. and be the guy. Where is Slaughter, you know, in this, John Slaughter, where is he at in this competition? Andre Turrentine started the last three games, I guess, for Tennessee. Made a big play in the Iowa game with an interception in the mm-hmm. red zone. Which was a big play at the time because Iowa had some momentum. It's not like he picked off Patrick Mahomes, but I mean, he made a good play.
And they were driving. Like, who knows? The momentum could have switched. Like, that was a momentum changing play.
Mm-hmm. And so that should give him some confidence. So where does he factor in there? Is Will Brooks, is he going to be, what's his competition level to safety spot? So you got three or four guys there in the competition. But man, they're just green. They just don't have a ton of experience. And who takes a step, right? How many of those guys take a step? Who really steps out and kind of takes the bull by the horns, if you will, at that position over 15 practices? I think is going to be really intriguing to watch for me, because I think they want to leave Jordan Thomas at star position. Because mm-hmm. as exciting as Boo Carter is, I'm not sure Boo Carter is going to be ready to be the star. Yeah. You know, right away, that position requires a lot mentally. They put a lot on that position in terms of adjustments, lining guys up and all those things. So I don't know that he can come in and win that job right mm-hmm. away, because I'm not sure where he's going to be mentally. Jordan Thomas is a guy, you're talking about staying healthy. He's made plays, but he's also, you know, been in street clothes too many times too. I mean, can he stay healthy? But I think safety jumps out to me as really an intriguing battle in terms of who's going to be starters there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything's set in stone there. I think it's a nice competition between transfers and young guys who are waiting for their opportunity. The whole iron sharpens iron strategy is going to be really interesting there. And it's also, like, to your point about just the amount of snaps that they're replacing at the two safety spots, I'm curious if Tim Banks holds true to just those kind of reps, where it's like whoever he settles on this spring and summer as his two guys in the safeties, and also we can throw Star in there. Does he still not really rotate, and he just trusts those guys to be to play the same amount of snaps that McCullough was playing for the last few years? Or is he more likely to rotate because these are new guys, and he's still gonna he's not 100% on anybody yet? I'm curious if he rotates a lot more in the back end than he did the last few years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think that part of the reason why he didn't rotate a year ago was that he was just so comfortable and had so much trust that McCullough was going to be where he was supposed to be. And he was going to, he was going to correct mistakes. It's kind of like try to be the rim protector in basketball, if you will, right? That he can mask somebody making a mistake. Does he really come out of spring or even fall camp going, all right, these two guys have shown me that I've got complete trust in them? Or is it going to be a little bit more by committee till somebody runs with the job?
Yeah.
It feels like there's a more opportunity for a rotation this year than in previous years, because it's hard for me to say that, hard for me to think he's going to have that complete and 100% trust and just two guys over everybody else, given their lack of experience that they have right now.
No, I mean, I 100% agree. And I think that's a good problem to have. And this is one of those things where, look, I mean, they're replacing good players. Like Tamarian McDonald was a really good player for Tennessee. Wesse Walker was a huge find for Tennessee in the portal, and he was a great player for Tennessee. McCullough, I think you could make a case. Would you say last year was his best year as a Vol? Because I think you could say that. Yeah.
No question it was.
So that's huge. So that's a lot of opportunity for these new guys to step in. But I'm with you. I think it's just going to be a rotation for a while and a learning curve a little bit. I think it will be less that way though with the corners. Do you feel like it's just the corners is going to kind of know where they're going to go? I mean, obviously with the transfer, you don't know what, is it Jermaud McCoy? Is that Jermaud? Yeah. And then on the other side, obviously Ricky Gibson, who got some starts and played a lot, obviously in the Iowa game. So you feel pretty comfortable on both sides because McCoy obviously lit it up as a freshman in, at Oregon State, and Ricky Gibson has all the intangibles in the world to be a great corner for the next couple of years here in Knoxville. So you feel, it's not that you don't feel good about the back end. It's just that I feel like you have a better understanding of what you have at the corner spot than at the safety spot right now. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you've got two guys who you believe in, right? Because you've seen Ricky Gibson do it, and there's obviously a year's worth of evidence of McCoy doing it in a league that throws the ball a lot, you know, with last year. So, you know, that gives you some comfort. Now, I think the question about that group and that position is, what does your depth look like? Where is Jordan Matthews? We all have, you know, the high rankings, high ceiling, you know, with Jordan Matthews, but he's a guy who struggled last year. I mean, he really did. He struggled, you know, just with the transition from high school to the college game. And so where is he? I think this is an important spring for him, not from the standpoint of if he doesn't run and take off and, you know, just grow leaps and bounds and become a star this spring that he's suddenly a bust. But I do think this is a big spring for him to get his confidence back in himself and to create some belief with his coaching staff. Christian Conyers is a guy who played on special teams a great deal. Where is he at in terms of being able to play corner? So I think you're right in that there's two guys that they feel pretty good about. The question is going to be, what does that look like behind them? And here's the thing we don't know. And this is the interesting part about spring practice, which goes back a little bit to what I was talking about off the top. A year ago, Kamal Haddon, many of us thought Kamal Haddon was going to go into the transfer portal last spring after spring practice. That was just going to be kind of a, hey, it's probably better off for you and us and everybody if we just, we gave it a shot, it didn't work, everybody just goes their separate ways and everything's good. And all Kamal Haddon did was went through spring practice and was Tennessee's best corner coming out of spring. And ended up, you know, all right, we're not going to run him off. We want to make sure he stays, you know, and do what we need to do. And obviously he had a good year up until he got hurt. So sometimes those things happen in spring. Okay. And not necessarily that, I guess you could say Kamal Haddon went and won a job last spring, but he went and won his place on the roster that they were like, we, you know, this guy's, he's above the line. He's absolutely going to help us and going to help us a lot to the point that we're going to be, there's too much value in him not being here. So I think, you know, that happens from time to time. And I wonder where that is with a guy like, you know, Christian Conyer, a guy like Jordan Matthews. I mean, Christian Harrison's going to move to safety. That could be another guy that jumps up and is in the competition at the safety spot. We just don't know yet. So those are some of the intriguing parts of spring practice is just, again, who factors in that you say, hey, this guy's going to be all right. You know, and I think Jordan Matthews and Christian Conyers are two of those guys that Tennessee needs to say at the end of practice, hey, they're going to be all right. We're going to be all right there with those guys. They just need to keep coming this summer, but we're absolutely going to be ready to play them. Because if you go back and look, Willie Martinez played about four corners last year before Haddon got hurt. So he was rotating pretty good. Who's he going to rotate with right now? I like their first two. I need to see three and four develop this spring.
Absolutely. Who will be the Brent Hubbs guy from the 2024 class?
I love Boo Carter. I mean, just the more I watch Boo Carter play this past fall, I mean, just, he's so dynamic with the ball in his hands. He's such a good athlete. To me, he feels like he's got the it factor from a competitive standpoint. I'm so intrigued by who he is and what he can do to help this team. And look, skill guys are easier to jump on, right? Mike Matthews. Yeah. I mean, I love the Staley kid that they took from South Carolina. I think he's a really good player who's going to make an impact. I tell you a couple of guys that I'm really interested in seeing, not necessarily for this fall, but out of this class, is a guy like Gage Ginther, the offensive from Colorado. Yeah. Could he play center? Is that a guy that gets a look at center, or is he just a guard all the way?
Do you think tackle's out for him potentially?
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe. I mean, right tackle, I guess you could do that. I'm curious to see where he factors in and what he looks like, because I think he's a good football player. I really do. I think that is one of those that's going to be a good football player. I think Jesse Perry has a bunch of upside, but he's so raw, he doesn't know what he can or can't be just yet, you know, on the offensive line, which is intriguing. And, of course, Bennett Warren's not here. You know, the Ross kid from down in Alabama's not here yet. Those are two guys you'd love to see this spring. But I think those guys can step in and you know, be interesting factors, you know, in 25 for sure. So those are some guys that I'm intrigued by. But the beautiful thing about this roster right now is, I mean, you need Boo Carter to be able to return, to be a return guy for you because you lost D. Williams. But you look at that 24 class and you love Mike Matthews, and Mike Matthews should be somewhat of a factor, but Mike Matthews doesn't have to come in and be the guy right out of the gate. I mean, who on that roster that they're coming in, and that's a credit to Josh Heupel and the staff and where they've got this roster at right now, that you're not giving out starting positions when you hand out uniforms. And Tennessee just went through too many years where guys were starters by default. Hey, Darnell Wright, you're the most talented guy. You're not ready. You're overweight. You're not sure, but you're the best guy we got. Figure it out. We're going to throw you out there at tackle. You figure it out against, you know, 21, 22-year-old men who have been playing college football for 3 years. Good luck.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Alante Taylor was a wide receiver that they flipped to DB and said, hey, not only are you playing DB, you're a starter. Congratulations. I know you haven't practiced yet, but you're a starter. And Tennessee's not in that world now, which I think is awesome. I mean, that's why you're seeing Tennessee with the odds that you're seeing about them, because it's just not a situation, Chase, where they're just playing out of necessity half of their freshman class in critical roles like we've seen in years past.
And it's a good problem to have. It's just that's where we are in the development, right? Like that's year
exactly
four in the
what
hype
you're looking for. I mean, listen, I think Peyton Lewis is at running back's got a chance to be a really good player.
Yeah.
I don't think Peyton Lewis has to be any kind of man or the guy. Of course, he'll miss spring practice because he's recovering from some injury stuff and surgery. But, you know, even a year ago, I mean, I like Cam Seldon. Cam Seldon got to sit back and be the fourth guy. You know, learn every day in practice. We'll get you some reps in when, you know, it's mop-up duty time. And then, of course, you get to the bowl game and he gets some increased opportunities. But he had practiced for, you know, 16, 18 weeks to get ready for that point. That's what you want to have happen. Now, he's got to take a big step this spring, but you feel good about him because he's had a year to develop instead of going, hey, you got to go, man. You got to play.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have any other options. We got to, you know, we have to play you. And that's what, you know, you'd like to bring Peyton Lewis along a little bit slowly, particularly.
You want Cleef Akeef to be a bigger factor. You want him to pop. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got some bodies there, and you want, you know, you don't want to have to just put it all on a 17, 18-year-old kid and say, hey, you're the guy. And that's, you know, Tennessee's not in a position where they have to do that with many guys in many positions, if any at all, this spring or this fall.
Yeah, I guess it's really The only person I would say maybe is Lance Hurd, where it's like, you don't have a lot of start experience, but I mean, he has a year behind two elite offensive tackles to learn at LSU last year.
You know, he's a little bit different because he's a transfer and he's been on the campus. You know, I mean, he knows how to practice. He knows what it takes, you know, day in and day out.
Just a lot of pressure on him right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. Now, he's, you know, they brought him here to be the man, just like they did John Campbell a year ago. Mm-hmm. But those guys understand that because that's the portal. The high school kids think they're going to be the man, but they've lived in a world from the time they were 7, 8 years old where they have been the absolute best player on their team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, you got to watch some of these Jordan Ross high school tapes at Vesuvia Hills. You know, like, I mean, the man.
But you know what? I mean, some of those, there's been a lot of guys who were man childs and, you know, elementary, middle, and high school. And it takes a minute.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, is James Pierce any better athletically now than he was when he arrived on campus? He's bigger and stronger, but in terms of twitch and quickness off the ball, first step, all those things, he's probably not any much different than he was when he arrived.
Yeah.
Okay. But when he arrived and he did those moves he did in high school, which was, hey, I'm going to outrun everybody off the edge, Darnell Wright caught him and, you know, threw him about 5 yards, you know, behind the play.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to learn. And these guys have to, you know, these guys who are elite high school players have to learn. That's where you have so much respect for a guy who comes in and plays as a freshman on the offensive line and is a good. It is a good offensive lineman as a freshman, not just a guy surviving. I mean, I go back, you know, several years, but I mean, Aaron Sears was a guy who midway through his freshman year, like, okay, this guy's different. You know, obviously Jamal Lewis got off the bus and was like, okay, Travis here, okay, these guys can play, you know, and certain positions it's easier to do that at. But, you know, there's a learning curve for these guys. And so, again, you just don't want to put it all on those guys right out of the gate, and Tennessee's got the luxury they don't have to do that.
Yeah. I'm excited to see ultimately what happens there, but I think it's a good problem to have for sure. Where is Tennessee, though, thinnest heading into 2024? Is it tight end or is it somewhere else?
No, I think it's tight end. Yeah. I think it's tight end. And here's where I say it's tight end is because who's the body behind the two? Like, is there a three? I mean, is there a walk-on?
Cole Harrison? Does he play right? Like,
I mean, Cole Harrison's, you know, I mean, that's putting a lot on him to try to do that right at, you know, be that right out of the gate. So I would say when you look at bodies, just sheer bodies, thinnest would have to be the tight end position because, A, you don't have many bodies and you've got nobody proven at that position either.
Has anyone moved? Like, or I guess I shouldn't say has anyone moved. Could anyone move to tight end in a pinch? Could, like, they do a just because they're a supreme athlete, like Princeton Fant was just a do-it-all. It's hard to define what position Princeton Fant really was. I mean, he could do so many different things. Like, is there someone on the roster right now who could fit that mold that they could use the spring and summer to use as, like, that emergency Swiss Army knife guy?
You know, I mean, sadly, if they went that route, it would probably be having to play two tight ends at once, and you would have the guy who's the receiver body, and then you would have an offensive lineman, you know, who could play some tight end, but not be a pass catching tight end type deal. I mean, you look at that roster and you're just like, I don't see a big receiver that slides inside, right? I mean, Brew McCoy's not the tight end. Okay. Well, who else on that roster would be a big wide receiver that could slide inside?
Mm.
I mean, it's not Chaz Nimrod. It's not Caleb Webb, right? I mean, it's none of those guys. I mean, there's not a slot guy moving inside. You know, I mean,
it's, you know who's big enough that, like, if you didn't have the need at running back, it's like Cam Seldon. I could see slot. Like, he's a big kid. Like, so Cam Seldon is like,
right. Yeah, I mean, you're right, but he's also your back.
Exactly. Like, it's not a choice you can make, but it is where I'm thinking, like, those kind of Princeton Fant type frames. Like, he's not as big, but he's kind of, you saw a movement there. Cam Seldon was a lot bigger than I thought he was when I saw him running through holes and at Iowa.
He's a big guy. I mean, he's a really big guy. You know, there's not a defensive end.
No.
You know,
they tried Kandavian, right? They tried.
And you know, they've got Emmanuel Okoye, who's just, I mean, he's there, but I mean, he is, it's not his fault. He's just so far away physically and mentally. I mean, the guy played about 6 months in pads in his entire life before he got a scholarship offer. And the high school or the club or whatever it was he played in over there, I mean, they practiced on the soccer field that didn't have hash marks or sidelines or end zones, you know, or
goal posts. Take time.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, and you don't know if he'll ever get there, but I mean, it's hard for you to say, okay, he's been here, you know, 9 months, 10 months. All right, he's good. He's ready to go. I mean, that's a true project. Not his fault. Yeah. It's just he's a true project.
And that's okay. But I, I think it's got to be tight end. Were you surprised they didn't take two in the portal? Or do you think it was just one of those they didn't have a choice because?
No, I think they would have taken two if the right two would have come. I just think it was hard. You know, I think it was hard to convince somebody that
can be our emergency tight end,
right?
Because we don't have depth. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say we're really going to play three. They would, but it's hard for. I mean, if a kid's going in the transfer portal and he's a good player, why is he going in the portal?
Yeah,
one, he's probably lost his quarterback, or B, they're not using the tight end in the passing game, and he wants to go somewhere where he's the guy. Right? I mean, Lance Hurd picked Tennessee because he didn't want
to. I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He didn't want split time, right? He was ready. He was tired of standing and watching some All-Americans play in front of him. So he comes to a place where he could step in and play. Mm. Well, I mean, Holden State's picked Tennessee because he could step in and play. It's kind of like going and getting a, you know, everybody's like, why don't you go to the portal and get a quarterback? Well, who's coming?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you go get two tight ends. You know, is Ethan Davis going to stay if you get a second tight end out of the portal?
Yeah.
You know, then you're sitting here a year from now and you have no tight ends on your roster, right? So I just think it was really hard to – really almost impossible to land two tight ends, two quality tight ends, and you say, hey, they're going to plug and play, step in and help us right away.
I agree. So I wrote this week, Brent, about something I saw because Chris Lowe, I don't know if you saw his piece on – Florida for Tennessee on their schedule in 2024 of like that being the big, it's good. Look, it's a big deal. You get Florida and Alabama at home back to back. There's no bye in between. Like I understand like on the surface why that would be the game you circle of like where Tennessee's heading if they're going to be a playoff team based on how those games go. I disagree. And I read about this and I'm curious if you share this sentiment. I actually think it's NC State on a neutral site in Charlotte is the game that will kind of tell us where Tennessee's going, because they've lost, I believe, four games at home under Josh Heupel since he's been at Tennessee. Four total. And you get Bama and Florida. Obviously, you swept them in 2022 at home. They've lost one in the last 2 years, and that was to a very good Georgia team this past year. One of the things, there's a lot of reasons to trust Josh Heupel at Tennessee. One of the best is the home atmosphere and him protecting home field through 3 years here at Tennessee. It's a tough place to play, and his offense and I think his style makes it even tougher when you dig yourself a hole against this Tennessee type of team inside Neyland. I don't worry about the Florida game. I think if you're a Tennessee fan, what you have circled is you can't take the NC State game lightly, because it's going to be Nico's first true, I wouldn't say road test, because it's in Charlotte, a neutral site, but I mean, still like 2 hours from Raleigh. Like, I think there'll be a healthy turnout for the Wolfpack. You've got Noah Rogers, big transfer from Ohio State coming in. You got Grayson McCall, all-time passing completion percentage leader at NC State. Dave Doran, all he does is win 8 or 9 games every year. Their over-under, I believe, is 9.5, along with Tennessee. They're going to be competing near the top of the ACC. Florida's not. Florida, I don't see the same with Florida. I don't see the same with Alabama coming in to Tennessee this year. I think Tennessee will be favored in both of those games. I look at the NC State game where look, we're going to be rocking. I'm sure UTC, like, no offense, but like, hopefully they moved it to Thursday night, because Thursday night is a delight when we can focus on the other games for that one. I love the Thursday night opener for Tennessee. It's fantastic. I hope they do that this year. But you're not going to glean much from that game.
Right.
You're going to glean a lot from NC State, neutral site, a good football team that could win the ACC if things go right for them this year. I just, to me, think that's what will tell us where things are headed with the offense, how things are looking, who's going to be the new guys to pop. Because remember, Pitt gave Tennessee fits there two times in the ACC. And they obviously come in here and win early in Heupel's tenure 3 years ago. And then Tennessee, it had to go to overtime. It had to be a Cedric Tillman masterclass out wide for Tennessee to survive on the road against Pitt. So I just think, to me, what we've seen in the past with Heupel and the ACC, what I think NC State could be this year, to me, I'd have the NC State game as the far more important game to just check off and don't overlook and win. Because I think they're going to be okay against Florida and Alabama at home. And I don't know if every Tennessee fan agrees with that. What do you think, Brent?
Well, I think there are two different games there. And what I mean by that is the first test is going to be NC State. Now, if you'd asked me about NC State pre-transfer portal, I would have said no. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not. They lost two dozen guys to the portal, or 20 guys. Like, okay, they got issues here, you know, but they've gone and got them some weapons, you know, and had a really solid portal addition deal, which is why there's some
Jolly too at tight end, who Tennessee looked at. And
I mean, there's a buzz about some of those guys. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a tough one, because it's the first one on the road. They may have, you know, if you don't move your opener, they're going to have a couple more days to prepare, because they're opening on Thursday night. So they got a couple days to prepare for you that you don't get. You're right. You're not going to glean anything from the Chattanooga game, you know, unless, you know, you got the quarterback who struggles, or you know, the offense is just really sputtering along. I mean, they're not going to lose that game, but just sputtering along here, and it's not overly impressive. You're going to go, oh, I don't know about that. But the true test is going to come NC State. You know, now where I would agree with Chris a little bit is you get Florida, and that's, you know, you got to hold serve at home. I think the Florida game, there's going to be a ton of pressure on you. It's Florida. It's the rival. You've opened on the road at Oklahoma, you know, which is no easy task. So if you don't win at Oklahoma, then you have to win at home against Florida. That becomes much more of a must win. If you were to upset Oklahoma on the road, then everyone's going to assume you're going to handle Florida at home. But to your point, with new guys playing, and with, you know, a new quarterback and everything, kind of what it is, new running back and this, that, and the other, There, to me, there's more uncertainty going into that NC State game. Now, you know, as I don't know what coach said this, I've covered a few of them through the years. The more you win, the bigger the game gets moving forward, right? I mean, you start stacking wins, and then the pressure's there for how important. Or if you drop when you shouldn't, you know, with the 12-team playoff, you can still get there, but you better not drop another one, right? And so, you know, it just mounts as the season goes along. But you're exactly right in the fact that NC State game is no laydown. It's no gimme. And Tennessee better be ready to play that one. You better not take anything for granted there. I don't worry about them emotionally or mentally against Florida at home. Now, they got to go out and execute. But listen, they'll be ready to go. And I don't think that's a really good Florida team. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be more uncertainty about the NC State's going to have some uncertainties, but that's going to be an intriguing game. Mm-hmm. That's going to, as that week gets here, there's going to be more people going, oh, this game's a little more, you know, there's more to this game. Because right now everybody's talking about, hey, Bama's gettable, you know, Napier's on his way out at Florida. Most people, you know, a lot of people think, you know, they're going to struggle there. And there's an assumption that, you know, you're going to be cruising through your first two heading to Oklahoma. Yeah. And you better
That's
not
dangerous.
Yeah, you better not take anything for granted there, particularly with the weapons they brought in. Because I think they'll be able to score. And typically, Dave Dorn's teams have always played good defense. Mm. That's not been an issue.
Yes,
they've had issues scoring and staying.
Tony Gibson's an elite defensive coordinator. He's one of the best in the country.
Yeah, they've been good on defense year in and year out for sure.
I'm glad we're on the same page. And I look, if you get through Oklahoma unscathed and NC State, I mean, you're looking at 11-1 is probably where you're headed, with Georgia, the Georgia game being the one loss, because this schedule is just nice. Like, the more you look at it, the more you just you can see like why 10-2 feels very much in play. 11-1 feels very much in play. And I wouldn't worry about the Florida Alabama back to back like you would in years past. Like, we would be scared years ago, right? Like, this kind of stinks. No, nothing in between to break up Florida and Bama, but at this iteration, no Saban and everything else. Like, I think Tennessee should feel good about their and fans. The home games matter, and I love that Georgia's the one on the road, because you'd rather have that one on the road because it's already extremely hard to beat them. I don't want to burn a home game against a team like Georgia. We saw it last year. It's like, no, that's the one you actually want on the road. Like, I would beg to play Georgia on the road every year, because if you get you surprise them, all right, cool. We won on the road and we stole one in Athens. But as of right now, you want those kind of 50-50 games like A&M last year. You want that at home. I don't know how that goes in College Station a year ago, but you get them at home. I think that was a big difference in Tennessee.
And that game ended Jimbo Fisher's career at A&M, you know, and that was one that your home crowd was a huge factor in winning that game. And Josh Heupel played field position and obviously paid off in his favor. I think the Florida thing, I think the Florida team is going to be intriguing. I've seen some people try to create a little buzz about Florida, some talk about, hey, they're not going to, you know, they're going to be this, they got a hot shot, you know, quarterback, is going to give him a chance to be, you know, this or that.
Great. Have you seen the last 8 games? You don't have a choice. Like, it's the worst 8-game stretch I've ever seen in college football. Yeah.
So
I've never seen anything like it, Brent.
Yeah. So we'll see about that one, you know, and then I think the situation in Alabama is just really intriguing, because you're going from such an identity to a bunch of stuff that's new, and everything that's new is going to be scrutinized. It's just going to be scrutinized so bad and so hard, you know, that I'm going to be curious to see how that team plays, you know, because I don't know if this new coaching staff can will wins the way Nick Saban can do. I mean, you know, I look at, you know, that Alabama team, Milroe got better. I get that. He did. But there were some games that they won that they just, the last couple of years, they won because of Bryce Young. They won because of a fluke play here and there. And they won because they just knew they were going to win.
Yeah.
Do they really believe they're going to line up and win every game like they have the last decade? There's not a game they went into the last 10, 12 years under Nick Saban where they didn't go, we're winning this game. Do they have that? Can they keep that with a whole new regime down there? I don't know. I think that this is going to be a great case study for replacing a legend, which we all know is pretty hard to do. It's not the easiest thing in the world.
Speaking of head coaches here, now that you've covered Heupel for going on four years, what's been the biggest change you've seen from Josh Heupel, the coach, from when you first met him and saw him as a coach to where he's at now with the program?
I think he's got a better grasp of coaching a game where it's not just about it's always all gas, no breaks, score down. I mean, the Alabama game, he went for it on fourth down a couple of times. He didn't need to, you know, but the A&M game, I'm not sure year one Josh Heupel plays that game that way at home and plays field position and punts the football. You know, I think he's growing in game management in terms of when you're going to go and when you're not going to go. Not just go for it on fourth down, but when you're going to be super aggressive here or you're not going to be super aggressive there. I think he's trying to play a little more, quote, complimentary football because this league's – it's hard to line up. I mean, you're not playing in the AAC where the final scores are – every week are 54, 53.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're not playing 10, 7 games in this league either. Okay. This league is not there where it was, you know, a decade or so ago because of the growth of offenses. But I think that he's coaching games differently based on his opponent, based on where his defense is playing, based on what his offense is playing. That part of it, I think, is pretty interesting to kind of watch him grow, you know, and play some field position type football. It's just in-game stuff that I think you see him coach a little bit differently in that way. I don't think personality-wise off the field or in the locker room with his kids, I don't think he's changed a great deal. I mean, everybody's had to adjust because of NIL.
No. You
know, that's not just Josh Heupel. That's every coach out there is having to do that. But, you know, the value, the understanding of recruiting, you know, and, you know, that type of thing was always there. But I think he's got probably a better appreciation for it after having gone through, you know, recruiting in this league because it's a different animal in this league than everywhere else. But I think for fans to see, I think the bigger thing is probably see him shifting a little bit in some game management situational stuff.
Interesting. How will – it's early here, but based on, like, early returns and what you've gathered, doing more intel and research on Inge and Sims here as the new running backs and linebackers coach here at Tennessee – how will they impact the Vols in the short term in different ways and maybe in the long term? What are your expectations? And because I think they bring very different personalities and skill sets from what I've gathered. What do you think is going to be most intriguing in that capacity with those two?
Well, I think with Sims, you know, there's going to be a little more juice. And that's not to say Jerry Mack was a passive guy, but Jerry Mack was steady Eddie, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, Jerry Mack was one of those guys. Jerry, somebody's stealing your car. Well, we're going to have to get on that, aren't we? We're going to have to deal with something about that. Well, it's okay. We'll figure out a way to do something. I mean, Jerry Mack never panicked about anything. He never got worked up about anything. He was pretty even keel all the way through. I think there's going to be a little more emotion with Sims, okay? Not that he's a panic guy, but I think it's going to be a little more emotional, a little more intensity at times that way, which will be a change for the running backs. But I think that's, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I do think it's going to be interesting to see who are the calming voices on the offensive side of the ball. Glenn Ellerbe's a calm guy, but he's pretty introverted. You know, he's pretty much an introvert. Alec Ablin's in his second year. Kelsey Pope's young.
Sims, he seems like an extrovert.
You know, he is, but you know, he's not long in the tooth from an experience standpoint. I mean, neither is Joey Halsley at running an entire side of the ball. So they're young. I think, you know, the dynamic there will be interesting to see who's the guy that says, but take a deep breath here. Okay. Don't need to pound the glass. Let's not break the tablet. Let's not, you know, crack a clipboard here. Let's everybody take a deep breath and let's go that way. So I think that part is going to be pretty interesting. I think Sims is going to be a fine recruiter because I think his personality is going to lend to that. When you talk about Inge, I think that was a hire that Tim Banks made because Tim Banks wanted a compliment to him to help marry everything together. Mm-hmm. Rodney Garner's a really good position coach. He's a three-decade position coach in the SEC who's never been a coordinator, who's never had a desire to be a coordinator. He's coaching technique. He's coaching fundamentals. He's coaching scheme of his defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
Banks is coaching secondary. And you got to tie the front and the back together really well. And I think that he wanted someone that could help him do that, that could be a sounding board, eyes, ears, and a guy that was very complimentary to him that way. And I think, you know, Inge has been a co-defensive coordinator. He's had some success. He sounds, and just talking to him, like a guy who's probably not going to just go bananas and fly off the handle and go crazy. I think Brian Jean-Marie was a guy like that, was like, I mean, he would tear into his linebackers, but I mean, there was never, I think he was a pretty nice calming influence as well. And I think that's what they were looking for with Coach Inge. I think it's going to be interesting to see. Technique-wise, does he change anything with how the linebackers are coached and some of the things they're looking for? You know, he talked about what he's looking for in a body type. Everybody's looking for long guys who can run, you know, side to side. But how does he, you know, how does he fundamentally develop those guys compared to what they did with Brian Jean-Marie, who I think was a really good coach at Tennessee. But I think Inge has been, veteran, been through the wares, kind of been through it a little bit and can help, Tim Banks that way. And I think that's why Tim Banks went that direction. That's who Tim Banks targeted right out of the gate. That was his guy. That's where he wanted to go. That's what he was going to go after and convinced him to not go to Tuscaloosa and come to Knoxville instead.
I like it. Final thing here. This is a basketball question.
Okay.
If 10, let's see, makes the Final Four, why will it have happened this year in your estimation? Like, just when you think, like, I just tell you right now, hey, Tennessee's going to make the Final Four. What do you think the story is to why Tennessee made the Final Four this year?
Because they could score. They could score. I mean, you go and look at the tournament games that they were ousted in, games that they lost. There's not many games where they scored over 60 points. And their last five tournament games, the games that put them out, they scored 55, 68, 56, 94 in overtime to Purdue, which is the anomaly, and then 62 is the other. And, I think it's the fact that this team has the ability to score 75 points, and you don't have to have – you don't necessarily have to have one guy go bananas for you to get to 75. Now, Dalton Kennett can get you to 75, probably. But, Jonas Adu's got to step up and be a factor. And he's got to be a factor on offense, which goes back to my overall point that they can score. That Zakai Ziegler, you didn't have a year ago. He can go score for you. Those three have to carry this team. They need 8 to 12 from Josiah. They need 6 from Ganey. I know everybody's talking about Santi. He is what he is at this point. I don't know I think it's unrealistic to say, hey, we need double digits out of him in a tournament for Tennessee to advance. To advance, Tennessee's got to play defense, and they got to score. And scoring is Dalton Kennett, Jonas Adu, and Zakai Ziegler. And over the course of the year, those guys have scored. Now, you got to stay out of foul trouble to stay on the floor in order to score. All those things factor in, but you look at this, it's Adu, Ziegler, and Kennett. It's going to have to carry this team if they get to the Final Four. Those three guys have had a great tournament run.
Yeah, and I think more than anything, if you look at Santi's year, like he had some games where I think the Ole Miss game, he was like 5 for 8 from three, something like that. I mean, I just think he's going to be streaky. Where I think you need, if Tennessee makes the Final Four, it's because Jonas and Santi had a game or two where they did go off, where it couldn't be all Kennett or Adu or Zakai, and that they pushed them through for one of those matchups because it benefited them and they were able to push this team through with their leadership, their veteran know-how, that they get them there. I think they're going to need those two to push them through a game or two my guess.
Well, I mean, I think one of those two guys, I mean, I don't think they, if those guys no show, the tournament, then Tennessee's not going to get there. Okay. Mm-hmm. But at the same time too, I think Tennessee can get there without Josiah scoring 26 like he did.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you need him to do the things that he does, make a couple of threes here and there, get you 10 points, something like that is a nice game for him. If he has a game where he shoots it better and scores 15, okay, that's great. I mean, how many did he score at Alabama? I don't know what he finished with at Alabama, but he made three really big plays.
Yeah.
He made a couple of really big threes. Jemai Meshack made a couple of plays. I mean, you're going to have a game or two where somebody makes a play. They don't necessarily have to go off scoring, but they're going to have to make a critical play at some point in the basketball game to win the game. And you look at that Alabama win, what they do, they made plays in the last 5 minutes, right? I mean, they made a bunch of plays in the Kentucky game to get back in it. They just couldn't make the one play tie the game, right? And so what you know about the tournament is the last 5 minutes of the half is going to be – critical in the first half, and then the game's going to come down against good competition. It's going to come down to a possession-by-possession game in the last 5 minutes. Are you going to be able to answer the bell? At Alabama, they answered the bell. South Carolina, they answered the bell. Can you close out games in the last 5 minutes? Tennessee couldn't do that against Loyola Chicago, right? They couldn't do it in an overtime game against Purdue. But now they got it. They forced it to overtime. But, you know, last year they did it against Duke down the stretch. They did it against Lafayette the first game. They couldn't do anything. I mean, they had a lead. Everybody forgets they had a lead against Florida Atlantic. They just didn't score. They didn't do anything down the stretch. So who's going to be the bell cow in the last 5 minutes? And right now I feel like you feel pretty good about Ziegler and Dalton Connect being your bell cows at the last 5 minutes. Who can go get you a bucket? Because that's what the tournament comes down to. When it gets possession by possession, who's going to go get you a bucket, or who's going to go get a bucket for somebody else? And that's me. That's Zakai Ziegler getting a bucket or getting somebody else a bucket, or it's Connect on an isolation, or Connect making a play out of a double team.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, Brent, what can the good folks check out from you and the team over at VolQuest.com this week?
Well, we talked about it. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. We talked about that off the top. We got full coverage basketball, following this team all the way through the tournament. We got baseball coverage, spring practice. All week long, we've run a primer leading up to the start of spring practice, and we'll have full coverage when Tennessee hits the practice field on Monday. So it's a fun time right now. There's a lots of stuff going on, lots of discussion, lots of anxious moments for fans as you get into, you know, the beauty of March is the chaos and bracket busters and all that till you're in it as a fan, and your team is one of those teams who's not supposed to be, you're not supposed to bust any brackets. Mm-hmm. Right? Your bracket's supposed to go chalk for your team to get there. It's a different place, right? And so there's a lot of uneasiness and restlessness and nervousness. And it starts for Tennessee in the SEC tournament and obviously takes center stage with the NCAA tournament. But we're going to travel and cover it all and be right there in the middle of it with our entire staff. We'll be talking about it on the message board. So it's a great time to check us out right now.
Absolutely. Go check them out today. VolQuest.com. Brent and the team do great work and love listening and reading them each and every day. Brent Hubbs, always a pleasure, and we'll have to do this again soon.
Sounds good, man. We'll see you, buddy.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.